couple of headlines for us. One was to have an MOU or some sort of agreement and understanding between developers and communities to, you know, kind of address things that aren't necessarily addressed in the bones process, but to really, you know, kind of help facilitate community involvement and get things moving. And it was actually brought up, particularly, I think, in Maine, the involvement of people in the community to be part of the process and making some of the decisions would facilitate, you know, more acceptance of the process in general. A good suggestion, you know, that the process be informed by marine spatial planning, ecosystem kind of perspective, to look at these areas and to develop other mitigation measures and BMPs. We had a good discussion, and I have a nice list here of ways to communicate with folks specifically in this area, through the lobster clubs, wharfs, different associations, commercial fisheries news, really some good suggestions, and also to do what we've done similar to this meeting and piggyback on other fishermen's meetings, because it'll just be a better way to get people involved in the process. We had a good suggestion to develop or require development of kind of a dedicated either NGO or some sort of advisory body where people could go if they have questions on the process. And who do fishermen go to? Who do they contact? Who's kind of overseeing the general engineering plans and what's going on? And that this could somehow be a requirement. Maybe it's a fisheries liaison, but maybe it's more of some sort of stakeholder body of folks. Let's see if there's anything else. There's a lot, actually. I'm missing a bunch, but the cumulative effects should be looked at, and I don't know. I think really just specific to Maine and to this state, that BOEM and other groups should just sort of make an effort to distinguish all the different types of technologies and to really emphasize, you know, this is not monopile technology here that's happening. Not let the effects of, you know, this specific kind of design go by the wayside. That it should be included and elevated as highly as all the other technologies, because that's what would happen here. So that wants to be seen by folks. And that's it. I'll drop off the table now. But thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for modeling brevity.
Good job.
Peggy, would you like to report up from our table?
So our table focused mostly on communication, cables, and the insurance industry. So for communication, most felt that there's too many meetings and not enough information. So ways to enhance that, definitely dealing with the state agencies and the local fisheries groups early on in the process. They know who's going to be involved, especially if there's a specific project. They'll know who to communicate. It should be a fairly narrow group of people, and we have to get the right people involved in that process. Other communication measures were reaching out to the Maine Lobstermen's Association and several other groups, Fisherman's Voice, the Channel 16 and 13, notice some meetings on the local news, Channel 6, and email blasts from the federal government to permit owners, definitely blogs. Most fishermen are online, or maybe about 50%, so that definitely would be a good avenue of communication. Let's see. Fisheries liaison was pretty much a favorable position that might be part of the communication plan, so that you can really pin down who should be involved. Definitely regular and early on communication. And then for the cables, we were talking about here in Maine that there's a state requirement that you can't fish over the cables. So the state sets standards, so that's very important for scout fishermen and other people that use the gear that trawl or that type of fisheries. So it was suggested to use existing cable routes if they already exist, so that you're not disturbing the new area. And input with the fishermen on locations would be preferred. And then for insurance, it was really the need for some sort of insurance policy, and BOEM had talked about this, to have some sort of policy statement of that fishermen would be not penalized for fishing in a wind farm area. So that needs more development. Anything else, table?
Excellent. Thanks, Peggy. And last but not least.
Our table focused primarily on three main areas. One was access, fisherman access to these sites, how much exclusionary would be included. Secondly, communication. Obviously, we've already heard about communication, how to do it effectively, how to reach out, how to make sure that fishermen are involved early in the process. And then thirdly, we had various aspects of cabling, safety, and sort of the interactions between these facilities and the various gear types that are out there. So just looking over some of my notes, we had access to the sites. Will it be available? You know, how close can we fish to these sites? Can we fish over a cable? We've heard that you can't fish over cables, at least bottom trawling, in state waters. Some of the cables currently run across the shrimp grounds. Are these things navigation hazard? How are they going to be marked? And then are you increasing hazards because operators may not want to go through these areas in a storm? You may have to go around them. Are you causing additional hazards in terms of seamanship, being able to go where you need to go to be safe and to do storm evasion, get back to port? There were some notes that the data that we're using to identify potentially if appropriate wind energy areas may not reflect the historical fishing effort. You know, that fishing effort and locations of, say, 20 years ago are different than they are today. So even though you have identified something that might be good for today's fishing effort, it may not take into account past fishing effort. There were concerns about the impact of, like, jetting and cable installation on benthic habitat. You know, are we disturbing the habitat? How long will it take to recover? Should it be monitored? If so, how? And on communications, we talked about, what are the best ways to reach out to fishermen? And there was a lot of discussion about appointing liaisons who are local, who understand the local fishing community and have local contacts. And that is often more effective. We also discussed, like some of the other groups, using the fishery sort of oversight organization like the Maine Lobstermen's Association and the other major associations as mechanisms for developers to kind of get the word out to the fishing community. And then fishermen were saying that communication can't be about them having to reach and grab the communication, that the outreach is actually that information has to be pushed out to them in effective ways that they can access. So developers and the government needs to understand how does that communication work, and how can that information be pushed out to fishermen in effective ways that access their current communication mechanisms. And that means both personal mouth-to-mouth was described as being really effective in the local community. Electronic, okay, it's good, we need to do that, but you can't rely on a website. Developer or the government can't rely on the website as being enough to get the word out. You've got to actually reach out. And then I would say in the area of safety, we had a lot of discussion about cables. How do you bury them? How deep do you bury them? There was discussion that 2 meters is sort of an industry standard in the cable business, that where you can, geologically, you try to bury cables at least 2 meters deep. But how often do you inspect the cables after they're buried? What are there any standards for inspection frequency? After a storm, do you go out and have to inspect it after a storm? So a lot of discussion about cables and the interactions, because every one of these facilities would have to have a cable at least at some point on shore or an island where that power is needed. So how that cabling would impact fisheries. So those are really the key things: access, communication, safety. We also talked a lot about marking of the actual structures themselves. How do we make sure they're marked? How do we make sure that those things get effectively on the charts? And should there be mechanisms to actually push all of that data out locally to fishermen so that they understand where stuff is? But we had some comments that said it wasn't the local fishermen that will be a problem. It'll be transit folks who really don't know. They're the ones that are probably more likely to have problems with a new facility. I'm sorry I wasn't as brief.
That's okay. So we've got about 15 minutes left, and we need to leave a short period at the end to make sure we open the doors up to get some feedback from you on how well this meeting worked and suggestions for improvement going forward. But since we do have a few minutes left, maybe I open it up for a few questions or comments if folks, now that we're sort of back in the big group, and I invite Brian to join me in responding or having this dialogue, and Daryl. So anybody come away from your table or from hearing what folks have generated at the other tables with any other follow-up questions, suggestions, needs?
I spoke to Daryl earlier. We've done this, and this is my second trip, and others have been before. What happens now, and when is there really a tangible benefit to all this stuff?
You mean what happens now?
We've got tons of information.
Input from these meetings?
Yeah, what happens?
Yeah, so over the next few months, Ecology and Environment has already started developing an outline and started putting the framework together of submitting a report to us. And eventually there'll be a draft report that kind of captures all the salient measures and the feedback from all these meetings. As I said, the meeting minutes are already on the website. So once BOEM receives the final report, and then there'll be an opportunity to comment on the draft report, as I mentioned earlier. Once BOEM has the final report, we will look at that, and then we will, say, okay, whatever we adopt, we may not necessarily adopt all the recommendations in the report, but we'll adopt some of those as our best management practices, and we'll supersede the ones that are there. So when we receive an actual construction and operations plan, or even some things may be applicable to a site assessment plan, but probably not as many. We will use those criteria to evaluate what the developer has done so far, and then we can attach then terms and conditions to our approval of that construction operations plan based upon the requirement.
Just one question on what you just said, and it has to do with timing. Will the developer have this, your list of what's called BMD stuff, ahead of time?
In the case of Maine,
can everybody hear the question?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So in the case of Maine, as I mentioned earlier, we'll have likely a construction operations plan by late summer, early fall. I can't say for certain that the final report will be available by then, but there likely be a draft. We can share with Statoil at that point and say, look, these are some of the things that we're starting to look at, you need to take these into account, even though we may not be at that particular point with that particular project, because it's a little further ahead than some other. Oh, Daryl, no clarify.
I was going to ask you to clarify step back to where you said circulating the draft report. You're going to not just post it on the web, right? You're going to circulate to the folks who are in this room specifically, who signed up, who want to be kept apprised.
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
Okay, I just want to make sure you got that up.
Yeah, no, I think when I said I put it on the web, I think that might be the best vehicle so that people, instead of crowding everybody's inbox with a large document, you put it on the web and then give everybody a link to it. Say, hey, look, the draft's available, within the next 30 days, please take a look and provide us some comments
Yes, I just want to point out that it's not just going to be posted, but you'll let people know that it's there so they can actually go get it. And then the other thing is that you were saying about the draft report being available. As we move through this process of evaluating Statoil's construction operations plan, they will be at different points in the process come in for meetings with us, what we call during the whole process. So and we will have multiple opportunities, not just to sort of give them a report and say, go read this, but to actually sit down and discuss with them the range of suggestions that have been made at the table, even before there's a final report.
I have one more final comment on that. My interest is way entitled. I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm here for the win, too, but mainly my interest. There's a lot that's going to roll over eventually into other ocean energy type situations.
Yeah. I mean, if we receive obviously these are, a lot of these are probably geared, you know, more toward wind because that's the primary project we're reviewing right now. If and when we receive other applications for other types of technology, there will be some that are applicable. I mean, the regulations are the regulations. They're applicable to everybody. The best whole idea of the best man practices in the plans, that's applicable to all.
Yeah. What about one thing I, for example, gave the gentleman here a scientific paper to be reviewed in there. Is it possible for at the conclusion of this meeting to still send information to this organization before they do their draft?
Before this draft report.
Right. In other words, the folks that are going to take all this raw info.
I think that's a good question. Is to sort of. There are the meetings themselves, and input is captured from that. And I'm not sure if there's a mechanism to continue to capture input.
Right. I mean, at some point they have to submit the draft.
Right.
But you know, certainly if there's something that you feel that needs to be captured and submitted, I would encourage you to please go ahead
okay.
and submit it.
Okay. I did it. Yeah. Okay.
Any other thoughts, questions, comments? Everybody's hungry. Okay. I want to make sure to leave Brian or Daryl a moment at the end, but how did this meeting work for you guys? Notwithstanding the cross-postings about what time it began, it's not that just sort of happened. What worked well? What didn't work well? Do you feel like you had a chance to generate some good input? Thoughts or suggestions for
Bowen
moving forward?
Oh, about this meeting, if we had these sheets that we were passed out ahead of time, I mean, I RSVP'd, if you sent them to me, I might have read them. I might have had better time to think about which ones I wanted to speak to and what kind of ideas I would have had.
Something I don't know if you can do anything about it, but after a while, after it becomes the first half of the meeting is something that many of us have heard 6, 7, 8 times at different meetings. But it's important because other folks haven't to go through all that. But
yeah, that is the age-old problem. You're right to underscore it. All right. Well, I just want to say on behalf of the Ecology and Environment team, thank you all for participating providing your lively input, and stay tuned for a draft report. And I'll leave it to Brian to close.
Once again, thank you all for your time and patience. And we do understand that there is a lot of different meetings, especially up in Maine. Now that there is an active applicant involved in a lot of this, so I think what we're trying to do is continue the conversation. And just because this is the last of this series, it doesn't mean that our conversation on this topic is continuing. And this particular funded project, anytime you have something that you want to submit to the agency, feel free to do so. My cards are up here on the table. With that, I just want to thank you very much. One thing, there was a lot of questions. You guys are a little bit ahead of the curve on some, so I didn't provide it. But if you Google, it's a U.S. Coast Guard circular 02-07. That's the Coast Guard circular that lays out the process that they have. So it's NVIC-02-07, and that's the Coast Guard circular on offshore wind facilities. And it's kind of a boring document, so I know you're going to bring it up, but there's some interest. There seems to be a lot more interest about it here at in this one. So anyway, with that, thank you very much, and I hope to see you over the next couple days. We'll be here until Saturday and participating in another panel tomorrow afternoon. Once again, thank you very much.